Well, thanks a lot for the opportunity to speak before you this afternoon. One thing I should say is my background is probably a little bit different than most of yours and also most of the other people on the panel. I am originally a theoretical physicist by training, and then I got into computer software, where I was involved for a number of years. And to the extent that I've written on public policy issues, it's usually been in areas of sociology, ethnicity, race, social policy, that sort of thing. But about a decade ago, during the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks and the Iraq War, I ended up becoming the publisher of a small opinion magazine called The American Conservative, which opened its pages to really, in many cases, a lot of prominent, even establishment people, who were pushed out of the mainstream media for the doubts and the concerns they expressed over American military involvement in Iraq and a lot of the other policies at the time. So even though we were a very small magazine, we ended up attracting really some prominent writers. For example, Andrew Bacevich wrote quite frequently for us, a number of other people. And during that process, I really became much more aware and involved in some of these national security media reporting issues than I'd really been before. Now, in many cases, being an outsider sometimes obviously provides considerable difficulties on an issue like this, but also raises opportunities that you can sometimes look at things from a new light, not as somebody who's really been involved in a particular segment of public policy for decades. And along the way, in the last few years, I've really become shocked at the degree of media silence, complacency, outright cowardice on a whole range of issues that seem tremendously important from a national security and public policy point of view, and which I can't quite say I'm sure these stories are true, but they seem pretty plausible to me, and some of the people behind them seem very credible people. And if even only a fraction of these stories, it really would be a very negative statement about the nature of the mainstream American media and the degree to which we live in a world where a lot of the things going on are things we're totally unaware of. Now, my first inkling of this perspective came obviously in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, where even though it was very clear to someone like me who, you know, had only a slight involvement in public policy, that Iraq had absolutely no connection to the attacks, that there was no evidence that Saddam Hussein had been at all involved in that, that the case being made against him was a very strange case, a very implausible case, not in the interests of American national security. Still, America went to war, and in many cases, the cheerleading included large segments of the mainstream American media in a way that really shocked me. So, you know, when you see elite media organs behaving in such a strange way in one case, it makes you more aware that other things like that may be happening in other situations, and you really start to wonder whether the picture of reality you've formed over the decades is an accurate one, or maybe it's misleading in the same way that a lot of the charges against Saddam Hussein for being behind 9/11 were totally misleading. Now, you know, as things moved on, a few issues came up that really gradually shifted me along the path. And, you know, as I said, I can't really say which of these things are true, but there seems to be a lot of evidence for them. The first thing, and this actually has nothing to do with national security policy, back about a decade ago, as probably many of you remember, there was a story in the media about Vioxx, a pain-relieving drug that was marketed by Merck that was very popular, that made billions of dollars for the company, that was advertised very heavily on TV, and that was suddenly withdrawn from the market in a very short period of time. The reason it was withdrawn from the market was that the FDA was about to come out with a study showing that there was a tremendous amount of evidence that Vioxx, aside from being possibly less effective than aspirin as a pain reliever, also had the negative side effect that it tended to kill the people who took it, which, you know, is a serious side effect. The official FDA study indicated that at least tens of thousands of Americans had been killed by Vioxx over the years it was in circulation. Now, admittedly, these tended to be more elderly Americans, so it's not like they lost 70 or 80 years of their life. It was basically, they probably lost a few years of their life. But still, we're talking about tens of thousands of additional American fatalities. There was a huge lawsuit that followed. It generated some attention. Certainly for a week it was almost nonstop on the NewsHour and PBS, a couple of front page stories in the New York Times. It got a lot of attention. But, you know, basically within a period of a few years, it disappeared from the public headlines. And sometimes when I've raised the issue with people more recently, most people don't even remember it happened. We're talking about tens of thousands of American deaths, as proven by an FDA study, and it's vanished from history. One thing that happened during the time those stories were out there is, just coincidentally, I noticed about 6 or 8 months later, at the bottom of a few paragraphs in the New York Times, which I read in hard copy every day, bottom of page A23, there were a couple of paragraphs about a mysterious drop in the American death rate. It didn't say why it happened. It basically quoted all the experts as being very puzzled. But it turns out the year that Vioxx was withdrawn from the market, America saw its largest drop in fatalities in 50 years. Furthermore, when I looked at the data, the drop in fatalities occurred exactly among the age groups and with regard to the symptoms that were exactly what Vioxx was involved in. So if those figures are true, which obviously I can't say for certain, the number of people killed by Vioxx was probably well in the hundreds of thousands rather than the mere tens of thousands. Furthermore, when I checked the records, the year Vioxx was introduced on the market, America saw its largest rise in the death rate in 30 or 40 years. So those are simply statistical facts. They may or may not be true. We're talking about a situation where at the least tens of thousands of Americans killed, and quite possibly the death count was in the hundreds of thousands. And nobody in American society is aware of it now. It's not that it was secret. I mean, it appeared in the New York Times, but what didn't get a lot of media coverage. People didn't pay attention to it, and a year or two later, it was completely forgotten. In fact, I discuss it in one of my off-prints out there. But when something like that happens, you really have to wonder about the reliability of the picture that the American media portrays of things. The next thing that happened was, you know, back in the 80s, probably all of us remember the Rambo movies, you know, Sylvester Stallone going and rescuing all those POWs from Vietnam, you know, crazy, what was the guy's name, the guy ran for president, third-party candidate, Ross Perot, talking about rescuing the POWs, and, you know, laughed at it at the time, you know, all these crazy fringe people and everything like that. Well, you know, based on things I've read in the last few years, as far as I can tell, all the stories were entirely true. During the period of time in question, there were very likely hundreds of American POWs that had been left behind in Vietnam that the American government, or at least certain leaders in the American government, were totally aware of it. And that basically it was a gigantic cover-up that happened. Now, when I first came across a link to that story, I thought, this is the craziest thing I ever heard of. And then I noticed the name, the person who did all the research, the investigative reporting for what arguably could be the story of the century. His name is Sidney Schonberg. He was the person who won a Pulitzer Prize for The Killing Fields, one of the celebrated Vietnam War correspondents. He later became a top editor at the New York Times. The movie The Killing Fields, one of the famous Vietnam War movies, was based entirely on his work. He spent over a decade amassing a tremendous amount of very strong evidence, all sorts of different evidence, indicating that the stories were true, the POWs were there for probably 15 or 20 years after the end of the war, after the end of the Vietnam War, and America basically, the government covered it up because it was a tremendous embarrassment. Once I started talking with him, at first I was shocked. You know, even somebody like Schonberg, can you believe something like that? Sure, you know, I talked with, for example, two Republican congressmen who'd been on the Intelligence Committee. They confirmed it. It turns out there have been documents were found in the Soviet archives, transcripts of a Vietnam Hanoi Politburo meeting that also confirmed the whole thing. The story isn't a very complicated story. Basically, in the aftermath of the Vietnam War, as America was negotiating a peace treaty in Paris, the Vietnamese demanded $3 billion in reparations in exchange for America having devastated their country. They said they would not sign the peace treaty unless they were given the money as part of the treaty. Nixon and Kissinger needed a peace treaty. They signed the agreement. But then, as it happened, Congress never appropriated the $3 billion. And naturally, the government of the United States, and it turns out what happened was, Hanoi was suspicious about whether they'd ever actually get the money. So based on a transcript of Politburo meeting, they kept half the prisoners behind to make sure that they would actually get the $3 billion that America had agreed to pay them. Now, it turns out, in the aftermath of the French-Vietnamese War, the same thing happened. In other words, the Vietnamese said that they wouldn't return the French POWs unless France gave them money. France gave them the money, and they got the POWs back. In the case of the United States, basically, you know, as the POWs were being returned, the top people in the Nixon administration saw that they weren't coming back. Only about half of the ones that they knew Vietnam had were coming back. So they raised a whole fuss about it. There was a tremendous amount of internal tension within top reaches of the military, because, in fact, the chief of the general staff basically said, we have to start the bombing again unless they give us back our people. Nixon overruled it. He needed the peace treaty. And obviously the intent was that once things quieted down a little bit, Nixon would go to the top members of Congress, explain to them why the money had to be given to Hanoi, and the POWs would come back. But then Nixon got tied up with Watergate, this happened, that happened. And you know, after a few years has gone by, you have all these people who, you know, if some of the POWs had died in the meantime, you know, and many of them were under very difficult treatment and everything like that, it would be a gigantic scandal that would destroy the careers of all the American leaders in the Nixon administration who were aware of what was going on. So they kept delaying it and delaying it. In fact, interestingly enough, Reagan, when he came in, was one of the very few presidents who firmly believed the POWs were still in Vietnam. His administration made various efforts either to ransom them, possibly pay the money and get them back, or possibly rescue them. A few rescue missions were organized and they were called off at the last moment. But nothing ended up happening. And then, you know, basically after a couple of decades, Vietnam became sure that they'd never get their money, so probably they just killed however many of the POWs were left at that point. Again, look, I'm not saying I'm 100% sure this is true, but there's massive evidence gathered by one of the most celebrated journalists of the last 50 years specializing in Vietnam, confirmed by all these people. So yeah, I think it's probably true. And the fact that the government has covered it up for all these years was utterly shocking to me. I mean, you can understand why it happened, you can understand the circumstances, the self-interest involved. But I mean, we're talking what I described to some people as being the story of the century. America knew the POWs were there, deliberately made sure that none of them came back, lest the scandal destroy the country. So, you know, again, when you find something like that, and I'd say probably based on all the conversations I've had, all the evidence I've looked at, people privately contacted me, prominent people saying, yeah, they knew about it at the time, they still feel sick about it after 40 years, I'd say there's probably a 90-95% chance the story's really true. The fact that the media never reported any of that, produced by one of its greatest reporters, for example, a two-time New York Times Pulitzer Prize winner a few years ago, described Sidney Schomburg as one of the greatest war correspondents in all of American history. He did it, top editor of the New York Times, who was never covered in the American media. You really wonder about a lot of other things at that point. Now, you know, various other things, again, are collected in some of the articles I've written. One of them, which I think actually Daniel Ellsberg has occasionally alluded to, is the very bizarre case of Sybil Edmonds, a former FBI employee, and the things she heard on tapes when she was hired to basically translate tapes that were in Turkish of FBI surveillance of spy operations by, you know, sort of enemy agents of the United States. Basically, and she is sworn under oath, testified under oath, that the tapes showed that a top American government official was involved in making arrangements to sell nuclear weapons secrets from the U.S. government to foreign spies and terrorists. Now, you know, again, that's the sort of thing, when you hear something like that, the first time I read something like that on the web, I thought, well, I guess somebody escaped from a lunatic asylum. I wonder when they're going to catch her and drag her back in. And, you know, I'd read those stories year after year after year. Probably, like, it took me 4 years until I even started paying attention to the whole thing. It was such a bizarre story. But, you know, with the POW thing, with a few other things, you know, Phil Giraldi is a former CIA officer, you know, he's quite a knowledgeable person. He interviewed her. She's testified under oath. Her FBI supervisor said she's a very reliable person, backed her up entirely. Two top senators, Leahy and Grassley, actually held hearings where they basically, you know, people said, yeah, she has a lot of, she's a solid person. I mean, it's there. And, you know, the whole thing is none of this was ever reported in the American media. In fact, a few years ago, the thing that got me persuaded that there was really something there, the story came out. It was around the time she testified under oath in a trial related to some of this stuff. Again, sworn testimony that that's what she heard in the tapes. A story, a multi-part story came out on the front page of the London, of the Times of London, one of the world's leading newspapers. Again, documenting all this, all the evidence. Whether it's true or not, I can't say, but, you know, Times of London is one of the world's most prestigious newspapers. It was picked up in newspapers all around the world, all across the world. Tremendous story. Top American official, nuclear weapon secrets, covered up by the government for fairly obvious reasons, since it's a source of embarrassment. And the end result was it never got into any American media outlet. When the stories appeared on the front pages of half the world's major newspapers, backed up by all this seemingly credible evidence, and it never gets into a single American newspaper, you really wonder what's going on. Now, you know, again, for the last few years, I've sometimes told friends of mine when I get together with them that, well, there are about 20 things I could tell you. I'm not sure of any one of them. You know, I'd say probably the odds range from 40% likelihood being true to maybe 90, 95%, but there are a lot of them. Any one of those 20 things would make you absolutely convinced that I'd gone crazy. So, yeah, probably won't tell you about them, but, you know, I've occasionally written a few of them down. There are more of them out there. I'm sure there are many that I've never come across. One thing to bear in mind, and then I'll let the next speaker go up, is some of you may have seen a really outstanding film that just recently came out called Spotlight. Maybe a few of you saw it. I just saw it a couple days. A really outstanding film. It really, I think, might be in the running for an Oscar. It focuses on the Boston Globe and how it broke the scandal of all those priests, Catholic priests, molesting children. As the story goes out, you know, these rumors, facts, hints, some prosecutions have been floating around in Boston for decades. The Globe itself had actually published some small pieces saying, you know, this lawyer accused 20 Catholic priests of being child molesters. And it never got any attention. Then suddenly the Globe decided to focus on it because of a new publisher coming in, somewhat less tied in with the influential local establishment. And it became one of the biggest international stories in the world. They ran 600 stories on it in the years that followed. You know, the Catholic priest, the Catholic Church molestation scandal is a gigantic issue. But again, it only got out there because a few people were willing to write about it in the media. And, you know, otherwise it wouldn't exist. So, you know, the problem is when we really assume that what we read in the American media is reliable and accurate and complete, our assumption might be wrong. So, anyway, if any of you are interested in this stuff, I brought in a lot of off-prints towards the back of the room, and you can take a look. I'm not sure which of these things are true, but given how many of these stories floating around and the evidence behind them, I think at least some of them are. And if even any of them are true, it really shows our media is much less reliable than we think it is. Thank you very much.